last-minute come and not preparing. So this will be, but I do have quite a bit to say about pollution in cities, and I will be revealing some of my pet ideas within that, I hope you don't mind. So just some of the things that were kindly mentioned. I am I'm a bit of a moss man myself. I do like moss. It's a wonderful material. It's incredibly tactile. You can stroke it, and it's great. And it does change. If it gets, you can change it from something completely grey to something completely verdant and green. It's fantastic. By adding water to it. And indeed, I'm working with UCL Bartlett to make moss into an architectural feature to try and change its, to up its PR from being a sort of something that you needs to be pilloried and sprayed up and scraped into an artistic endeavor. Now, that's actually quite hard to do because moss doesn't grow on demand. It needs to go through its cycle. So it's fair to say that we're going through quite a bit of learning, which we can share some ideas with yourself on that. So the intention behind moss on walls was to try to make we've all seen green walls which cost an absolute fortune to install and even more to maintain. The intention is to make something that is zero maintenance, will just grow there naturally. So grow in a nice, graceful manner. And as part of, so the project is as much about architecture and making moss and what might happen to moss nice, as opposed to hated, which it quite often is. So moss, and indeed all plants, will absorb pollution, as we've heard, and it's great. There's a chap called Harith Pochi and Eleanor Hugo who did a project at Max Fordham's to look at the effectiveness of green infrastructure at dealing with a whole lot of things. I like the idea that nice mossy walls would reduce the noise in streets and things like that. Anyway, they looked at a number of different things. And the specific issue on pollution is that it will help, but it's a matter of a percent or two. Now we can talk about that as to how much, but it's not a big thing. It is not a big thing. Now, titanium dioxide is something, I don't know if you know, but it's the main ingredient for self-cleaning glass. I want to touch on that and reinforce what was said about it. It is used a lot now in self-cleaning glass, and we've got a lot of glassy buildings in cities. It's used on concrete to keep it clean. It's a product of it's paint. It's used in paint to keep things white. Now it's incredibly effective. It's a photo catalyst, and a colleague of mine who did a PhD on this about 10 years ago. And he found that it was very effective at reducing nitrates into nitrogen dioxide into nitric acid, which then ran down in rainwater and got rid of it. But if that gets into the air, and it will also produce, there's another product or species that comes from that process, the VOCs, which aren't very nice, and also ozone, which is fine when it's up, you know, in the ozone layer. But when it's down on the ground level, it is a quite effective toxin. All that's to say that the promise of self-cleaning concrete, self-cleaning glass, that will get rid of nitrogen dioxide, it is true, but one needs to be careful what you wish for, but you might replace that with actually more toxic gas So we can talk about that if you like. So I'm sorry I'm being a bit of a miserable engineer to say that there aren't any magic bullets, but actually we should be not chucking so much nitrogen dioxide in the air in the first place. Now, that's easier said than done perhaps. The biggest culprit is the internal combustion engine. I mean, basically, you must stop. Try not to burn stuff in cities. It's a dumb idea. It produces a lot of, it produces CO2, which is one thing, but also produces a whole lot of other things, like nitrogen dioxide, which you don't really want. Now, setting aside, transport is interesting, and I think it probably doesn't have so much to do with the built environment, but it does a bit. How we engineer our buildings does affect how much the need for transport is there. But I mean, just the narrow issue of getting rid of diesels, one could see how one could do that is you can transfer a diesel into a, you can make a diesel into a spark ignition gas engine. I think you can just transfer that over. In Dhaka and in Delhi, they said all the tuk-tuks, which were two-stroke, they said, right, we're not going to sell you any two-stroke anymore. You've got to go into compressed natural gas. And that happened overnight. And the pollution levels, you know, went down substantially, just like that. There's no mucking about, no consultation with the poor tuk-tuk drivers. And all of a sudden, they didn't have any fuel. There was huge queues. But now, they're all on CNG. And it's a much cleaner air because they said, right, you guys, we're just going to do this. So can you imagine that happening to the taxi drivers in London, saying, I'm sorry, you can't drive around in Houston anymore, you've got to be on compressed natural gas. I think it's a really useful, interesting exercise. But one can see how the electrification and self-driving cars are just going to completely revolutionize our transport system. Anyway, that's not to do with built environment. I'm a building services engineer, and actually, you start off by learning how to heat a building. That's what we do. And the heating of the buildings is the other half of the source of pollution in London and the nitrogen dioxide. And basically, we need to try and use less energy to heat our buildings. Now, I'm sorry, that's a bit of a boring thing to say, but it works. If you burn less, there's less pollution. Now, you can use advanced materials to do that. And the retrofit of the built environment is something that is, I'm sure there are subjects here, that new insulation systems that are small and dealing with moisture and things like that. These are all challenges that we need to be faced to reduce the need for burning stuff and heating our buildings. The other things that, and this is getting onto a hobby horse of mine, is that we're in fact, the legislation and the planning guidelines are encouraging us to burn more stuff. CHP is a more or less a requirement of the planning regulations. And CHP, which is combined heat and power, and I guess everybody knows what that is as the electricity supply becomes more provided by wind, PV, nuclear, even gas-fired power stations. The small CHP engine that you've been forced to put in your block of flats or anything like that will be the dirtiest form of electricity in the country. And yet we are being forced to put it in. This district heating systems, where you're just burning gas to supply that, have got losses associated with them of 50%. You might be lucky and get it down to 20%. That means you're burning that much more gas than you would do if you were doing it in your dwelling or home. So I've slipped in my hobby horse, which is about CFB, industry heating. But it is relevant because the less you burn, the less pollution we're going to make, and the CO2 issue is reduced. You've got less of a problem to start with. clearly incinerating stuff in the city it's difficult to see how that's a good idea, given the pollution overlay that we've got at the moment. So, some people might say, well, okay, so how are you? You do still need to provide some heat for buildings. This is a pitch for going for either cleaner, gas in itself is actually quite a clean fuel, and the boilers are getting better, and we can move into fuel cells and things like that as an upgrade cycle. But actually, we're probably going to become electric. You might say, well, okay, where's that electricity going to come from? If it is a gas-fired power station, don't put that gas-fired station, which will have NOx emissions, don't put it in the middle of the city where a lot of people live. If it's got pollution, try and move it away from where all your people are. There are other sources of electricity, as I said, wind and solar. With another hat on, I'm working in desert areas making electricity from the sun, and also growing vegetables in greenhouses. It's really interesting seeing the world through that perspective, because actually we need more CO2 in those greenhouses. We like increased CO2 levels. We squirt. Commercial greenhouses try to lift the concentration of CO2 from 400 parts per million up to 1,000, something like that. The productivity of the photosynthetic cycle will go up as the CO2 goes up. So that's one thing that is interesting to observe. But carbon is a resource in that sense. The other thing is the cost of PV, the electricity from PV, is just flying down. There are the cost, people are selling electricity from a PV installation, albeit in an Atacama desert, which is a bit far away, for $3 cents a kilowatt hour. I don't know what that would, but that's about 2 pence a kilowatt hour. Now that's a long way away, but that's now. And they haven't finished reducing the cost of all of that. So I can see if one's talking about a future that doesn't have pollution. I think there is a future, and I like it, that is solar, which is either having solar panels in the country that you're in and then storing it, the cost of storage is coming down as well, or by having solar and wind all over the place and then having a network of power cables around the world. I don't see that as being too far-fetched. I think it's happening very quickly as we speak. So coming back on message as to what new materials there are to reduce pollution, I would rephrase the question that we should try and avoid putting the pollution there in the first place, and either by insulating our houses or doing things like that, and also producing our energy from greener, less polluting